You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married. We are still awaiting a stimulus package to help small businesses. In California alone, 19,000 small businesses have closed permanently. Extrapolate that nationwide, and it's just tragic. While our legislators in the Congress and the Senate fool around with all of our lives, it's very, very maddening.
Yeah, and the leader, who's going to be Nancy Pelosi, who's from the San Francisco Bay Area, which is one of the hardest hit areas in the state of California and one of the hardest hit areas in the entire nation, is basically the one that is holding up the stimulus package. Now, if you listen to the Democrats will tell you that it's Mitch McConnell and the Republicans that are holding things up. But I really beg to differ. McConnell and the Republicans in the Senate have wanted to pass this stimulus bill for months. The problem is all the pork riders on the bill. Okay, so the bill was passed by a margin of basically 7 votes. Okay, so it was 214 votes to 207 votes in the Congress. And it's interesting to note that 18 Democrats either voted against the bill or abstained from the bill, which is like voting against the bill.
Right.
Okay, because they didn't agree, I think, with all the pork that had been placed on riders. And I mean, truth be told, they're also in districts that could have swung the other way.
Well, and there are progressives, I think, who vote against it in order to say that they think it should be even bigger. So the kind of the problem seems to be that Nancy feels like the stimulus should be $2.2 trillion. And Mitch McConnell thinks the stimulus should be pared down some.
I think pared down by about $500 billion, I believe.
Or that in total it's $500 billion, one or the other.
Well, I'm sorry. Yeah. You know what? It's a $500 billion stimulus, but he wants it pared down quite a bit. Now, you know, Linda, what's interesting about this is when you hear about this on the media, especially the mainstream media, they really don't talk about what the disagreements are between Mitch McConnell and the Republicans and the Democrats with regards to what's in the bill.
No, because what we get in the media is no beef in our hot dog. They simply...
Where's the beef?
Yeah. They simply give you headlines that, you know, just make you think that one side or the other is doing the bad thing. So you would think that with this country in the dire situation that it's in with small businesses, that they could come up with some sort of compromise. So put me in there, coach, and I'll say, okay, you want 2.2 trillion and you want 500 billion. Let's make it 1 trillion and be done with it and do something. Here's your money, figure out where it's going to go, but get money to these people who desperately need it. And I have a couple of real life stories to talk about that. But in addition, Ron, now you have shutdowns all over the country again. And you have restaurants who paid a lot of money to re-equip their restaurants for COVID, to put all these plastic shields in and, you know, just socially distance people as they're required to be and all these things that they did. And by the way, they're making half or a third or less of the income they were making before by having to do that, plus having to outlay the money. And now you've shut them down completely with absolutely no scientific evidence that having the people eat outdoors has anything to do with COVID. And in fact, they have already proven that over 50% of the cases that we're now seeing came from things like those Biden demonstrations for him being elected, those types of things, big groups. So they just shut people down for no reason. And now they're going to cost a whole lot of people their jobs again. and cost businesses their entire business again.
Well, this has been a political thing from the get-go. And that's the thing about Washington. And that's why nothing ever gets done in Washington, or very little gets done, unless it's by, you know, presidential decree or, you know, an executive order, because neither side wants to give in to the other. They fight each other when we, the American people, the unwashed masses, the business owners, the small business owners, are the ones that are out there suffering. The low-income people, the minorities, the people of color, the people that don't have significant job skills, those are the people that suffer the most. And the Democrats say, you know, historically, well, we're the people of the people. You know, we are the people that speak up for the unwashed masses. But really, that's not what it is at all. The Congress and the Senate people are nothing but rich elite oligarchs that you know, are in it for themselves and make tons and tons of money, not only while in office, but later when they become lobbyists. And they just cast us aside. And that really needs to end.
Well, they want to give money. Both plans want to give money to small businesses and to schools, which honestly, I'm okay if you want to give money to schools to retrofit them, but I'm not okay with paying teachers as we have been for the last 9 months when they're not working. I'm not okay with that. If you're a restaurant worker and you get laid off, you don't get paid.
No, that's exactly right. But that's the unions. That's the difference between the very, very powerful teachers unions and, you know, the regular like restaurant workers and things like that. You know, speaking of education, in the Democratic bill that was passed, you know, like I said, by the legislature, but not approved by the Senate, not passed by the Senate. That's right. Why we're in a stalemate. $225 billion laid aside for education. So $182 billion for K through 12, and $39 billion for higher education, such as colleges and universities. Now, boy, as a former division dean at a college, and I've been in the college and university system for a long time, I will tell you who doesn't need the money, okay? Colleges and universities, they are rife with money.
And most of them aren't even open, so why should they get money?
And exactly right. And here's these poor college kids that are paying ridiculous tuitions, and they can't even go to school. Okay, that really pisses me off. While you've got tenured professors, tenured instructors that are getting paid as if they were in there and working every single day, and to give colleges and universities $39 billion is absolutely ridiculous. Let me go back to small businesses, because when I read the documents in the bill by the Democrats, it doesn't tell you exactly how much money they want to lay aside for, you know, PPP, which is the, you know, the Paycheck Protection Program for small businesses. And that is defined as businesses that have 10 and under employees, which perfectly describes your company.
Well, it actually is many more employees than 10 or under.
No, but I mean, the majority of small businesses, right, which are the economic engine of the United States, or people that have, I would say, under 25 employees.
Well, that's possible. I think that they define it. I don't know the definition. I want to say under 100 or something. Those are the people that are desperate right now. The PPP money that was done months ago is gone for everybody. People, you can see by the unemployment numbers that they're laying off again. I'm laying off again. It's something that's unavoidable, and you don't want to do it. It breaks my heart. It breaks people's heart to do that. But if they're going to survive at all, they have to take these hard steps. We should not be in this position. These people were put there to fix this problem, and they can't do it. And they just keep arguing back and forth. And the reason that Mitch McConnell, one of the reasons why he doesn't want the giant stimulus is he doesn't want to encumber the government for that much money when the economy has been picking up.
That's exactly right.
And since the economy is picking up, he's for the thought of letting the economy take care of itself, which I totally agree with. But for heaven's sakes, get something to these companies and stop shutting them down so that they can do their business. And just one more thing. In Texas, Texas is totally open. Our restaurants are open. Our gyms are open. Our hair salons are open. Everything is open. People are living a pretty normal life. And guess what? They're making adult decisions about how to protect themselves from COVID on their own.
And, okay? And that's what our fantastic governor, Greg Abbott, by the way, let me say something about Governor Abbott. He was just designated by a conservative organization, but he was just designated as the best governor in the United States.
Well, I agree. And, you know, he's had that honor of being, if not the, but one of the best for the last number of years. He's an excellent governor. The difference is in Texas, we are completely open. We live a normal life. We wear our masks. We socially distance, but nobody is making us do it. Nobody's coming to our home and counting how many people we have for dinner.
Telling us to rat out our neighbors and rat out our fellow family members for holding, Thanksgiving dinners or family get-togethers. You know, the stuff that's out there, but I'll talk about that later. It's just incredible.
Our schools are open. Our churches are open. Yet Texas is not doing any better or any worse than any state that is completely locked down, like California, like Pennsylvania, like Michigan, like New York. We are not in a worse position because we are open. So you can talk about your science all you want, but we have the actual proof, and the proof is in what you can actually see on the ground in Texas.
Yeah, you know, the thing that I like, and, you know, of course, full disclosure, and I think our friends and followers that have been with us for the last almost 5 years now and talking while married, understand that we are escapees from California. Mm-hmm. And what a wonderful change to have left California, which is so oppressive, and people that live there now or people that view what's going on in California that have friends and family in California, just realize how oppressive that state has become under Governor Newsom. But the difference between Newsom and Abbott, who is our governor, is just, I mean, tremendous. We are treated like adults that can make adult decisions, when in California, it is a total nanny state run by sheer hypocrites. It's oppressive. It's not good for business. I mean, I was just out there again for business just a week ago, and just walking around, driving around in the state of California, you just feel it. You feel the oppression, and I could hardly wait to leave.
Yeah. Well, in New York, some of the churches and synagogues sued the city of New York, the state of New York, for Cuomo's regulations about not going to church.
Correct.
And the Supreme Court said that the churches and synagogues were correct, that their religious freedoms were being violated. And now in California, you have the Harvest Rock Church, which, you know, because we were not too far from it. They are also turning to the Supreme Court for an injunction blocking Gavin Newsom from restricting the number of people who are legally permitted to gather at houses of worship. So, and I'm quite sure that they will win that as well. So, you know, there's one more thing that I want to mention. Again, it's California, but only because they're so out there. You know, they're just so out there in the things that Gavin Newsom does. So all of these governors have had forbidden people to have so many people at their tables for Thanksgiving. And this, some group or some people went to court to get an injunction about not having a number of people over at their house for Thanksgiving at the time. And they lost. And I was very, very surprised. And what I think about that is it makes no sense. And I think if they were able to have gone to the Supreme Court, they absolutely would have won. Because what that judge did is he basically said something that's not a law, okay, not a law, that they still have to follow, and that their reasoning, which was science reasoning, and it was not just, it was for the restaurants outdoors, that they weren't compelling enough for him to change it. And I thought, no, wait a minute, that's not right, because what you're saying is that you have to
defend your position.
Yeah, you have to prove something where it's up to those people that made the rule right. to prove it, not you to disprove it.
Correct.
So the right ruling would have been that the state would have had to prove their reasoning and prove that it was scientifically valid and prove that they had the right to make that decision and to punish people if they didn't follow it. But it was asked backwards.
Well, yeah, no, it's weird because I do so many civil cases, you know, so civil is different than criminal. The systems, criminal justice and civil justice systems are similar yet dissimilar. And so in a civil justice system, if you are the person that you believe has been offended, right? In other words, you've been injured, not necessarily a physical injury, but in this case, an economic injury, a spiritual injury, an emotional injury, you file suit against the defendants. Your case against the defendants is that their law against you, their rules, their edicts, their laws against you, which they are enforcing, are unconstitutional because they are non-science based. There is no objective facts to support their position of oppression against you. That's your argument. You don't need to go any farther than that. It is up to the defendant to defend themselves by saying in summary judgment in their moving papers, okay, that no, wait a minute, everything that we're doing to the plaintiffs is constitutional, it's lawful, and it's science-based. Because the courts can't go on speculation. As an expert, I am reminded, of course, I don't make the mistake, but I am reminded by watching other experts get on the stand to defend one side or the other, and they speculate, there's an objection, and the judge always upholds the objection because you are not allowed to speculate in court. It's based on objective facts, you know, and information.
Well, that's not, I think, what they did in this case.
No.
And I felt that was incorrect. And unfortunately, they didn't have enough time because the time of the order was upon them. So the restaurants had to all close. People had to obey for Thanksgiving. And they didn't have time to go to the Supreme Court, but I'm sure that they would have won on that.
Well, you know, and then, you know, I'm not an attorney, but I stayed in a Holiday Inn once. Sometimes the plaintiff or the defendants get to appeal the ruling by the judge and they bounce it to another higher court. So we'll just have to see what's going on with these things. But I'm telling you, you're going to see a ton of litigation moving forward with regards to lawsuits like this.
Well, it's the busiest time of year for restaurants, for gathering of people.
It's huge.
And I mean, yes, company parties, those are probably a thing of the past this year, but just family and friends getting together, that's important to people. And after being in lockdown for so long, for them to take this away from people and to shut down businesses in so many places in the country, because it's the majority of places that are shut down. In California alone, it's 41 counties, which holds 98% of the population. I mean, you might as well just shut the whole state down. That's ridiculous.
Right. And, you know, people are getting angrier and angrier and more frustrated because they do feel oppressed. And especially when, you know, you have some people that are out of work, you know, get the whole childcare issues. I mean, there's so many stressors.
Yep.
On the people out there. And we felt, as business people, we have felt those stressors as well. And you feel so bad for the people out there. I don't think the governments, the so-called leaders, the Congress people, the senators, the governors, the mayors and things, I just believe that they are so out of touch with the working man and woman, the mothers that stay home, the fathers that stay home, for God's sakes. And they're just not in touch. They live in this bubble And they're a bunch of hypocrites. You know, have you seen on television, you know, the mayor of Denver told everybody to stay home, and then he took off with his family to Mississippi. Somebody in California, a big leader in California, took off for 2 weeks in Hawaii. I mean, you know, when you're telling everybody to stay home and social distance. So the hypocrisy is, I believe, going to lead to the downfall of a lot of these politicians moving forward. Hey, how about our first cup of coffee?
I'm ready.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist, death investigator, and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. Are you a fan of CSI shows and documentaries? Are you fascinated with how death investigators like me solve high-profile death cases like you see on the news? If so, then I encourage you to join me as I unpack some of the most high-profile police and civilian-involved death cases in my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. Read all about the forensic evidence you never heard on the evening news. You can get a copy of my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, today by ordering it on my forensic site at www.dronmartinelli.com. DRRONMartinelli.com. And remember, without truth, there is no justice.
Thanks for the coffee. You've been getting the coffee for me a lot lately. I appreciate that.
I'm your huckleberry.
Okay. You know, I want to go back to the story I said I had. So I have an employee who I had to lay off. And I feel terrible about that because it's a very good employee.
Been with you a long time.
Yes. Very long time. And my desire is to bring him back at a time as soon as possible. But I felt that because this employee was making nothing on commission, who's a commission salesman, that he's better off getting unemployment so that at least he could survive as best he could. He lost his apartment because he could not pay the rent on the unemployment, because in California, they're not giving the extra money per week.
Correct.
That President Trump said that they should.
Right. Well, I think that was like the $600 or something.
It went to $400 more a week. So unemployment comes to something like $400 a week, which is not going to support him. Okay. So he lost his home, basically, right? He lost his home. And so he came out to Texas. And he said that, you know, he was looking for a place to stay, and we happened to have a small property that we were not using, and we had our renter had just moved out. So we said, hey, well, you can rent this place for much less money. So he was very, very happy. And so we did a lease agreement, and he's waiting for his unemployment. He's been waiting for an unemployment check now for over 2 months. And now the state of California says it's going to be another 8 to 10 weeks because he moved out of California. And they couldn't verify who he was, which is so completely bogus, because he has sent in every piece of documentation that you possibly could. I have sent in every piece of documentation that I possibly could, and they're basically screwing around with him over him getting his money. And this is what you get with the states and what they're doing to citizens. So you want to put these people out of work, and this is what people go through. This young man didn't deserve to go through this. He deserves his unemployment checks. He's been employed for well over 20 years, and he deserves his unemployment check, and he cannot get through their stupid state of California unemployment red tape rigmarole.
I see this as vindictive. I've mentioned this before. When people leave the state of California, for Texas or any other state, you have to be extremely careful in documenting everything, in sending certified mail, not just put it in an envelope and send it through the mail, but certified mail that requires a signature. And let me tell you why. Because the state wants to suck every dollar they can out of you. Great example is us. When we left the state of California, paying registration for my pickup truck, which was a ridiculous amount of money. I think it was like $800 for my registration, you know, for a truck at that time that was like 2 years new. Okay. So I'm paying $800 for this truck. We move to Texas. I get the driver's license. I do the residency. I get the registration. I fill out the form for the state of California and put it in the envelope. My mistake was, I trusted the state of California that they would, you know, open up my mail and they would see that, and then they would list me as no longer being in the state of California. That's not what they did. Okay. What they did is that they went after me, even though I am clearly a resident of Texas, living in Texas, got a, you know, mortgage in Texas, got a deed, got a driver's license, registered to vote and vehicle registration. Okay. And they went after me unbeknownst to me and sucked $800. They put a lien on my personal account and sucked $800 for registration to California. And do you remember what we had to go through?
Well, okay. We sent the papers several times to them again.
To the DMV.
I kept copies of everything.
Right.
So we sent it all again and they did nothing. And we called and called and called. And actually they would hang up on us.
Exactly.
And
they were very rude.
They did nothing. So then I sent it certified and never would they reverse it. Never would they even respond.
Well, you remember what they did?
Steal your money.
They do, but remember what they did at the same time. They said, well, wait a minute, this is not our issue. The
State Board of Equalization.
Which is the taxing agency in California. Well, they sucked the money out of your account. I'm going, wait a minute. It was for registration fees. It wasn't for property tax. And you remember, Linda, we had to go back and forth and call each agency, and each agency was pointing the finger at the other.
Right. So okay. Nobody did anything.
And we lost that $800.
They kept our money.
And we lost that $800. Yeah. This is the same thing that's happening to your salesperson. I believe it's vindictive. They will not respond. And they are punishing him for leaving the state of California. They're looking at him, I'm speculating, but they're looking at him and saying, well, he's no longer a citizen of the state of California. He's a citizen, a resident of Texas, and he shouldn't have that money, even though he earned every bit of that money.
Yes. And I paid into it, that unemployment for him, and he never would have left California. If they hadn't shut everything down and we didn't have to lay people off.
Right. And your business is in California. It's not in Texas.
Correct.
So he's working for a company. And so many people now are working remotely.
Yes.
I know half of my staff is working remotely. And he doesn't have to live in the state of California to work for a California company.
No, he's paying his unemployment taxes in California. He's entitled to that money.
Of course he is.
But this is what people go through. And, you know, when you get up into our Congress and Senate, I'm sure that they don't know these day-to-day stories of people's lives and how they're impacted by them not doing the stimulus. Because if they did the stimulus, then I could hire him back. Okay. But they're not doing it. Everybody is arguing at our expense. And I just think that it's so irresponsible and so elitist to not pay attention to what's happening kind of down in the trenches with the people that are the engine of this country.
Well, what's happening in my mind and in the mind of a lot of people is we're pretty much going to lose President Trump, I believe. I don't think he's going to prevail. And we're going to have Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, and we're going to have a socialist form of government. And you can see the cabinet picks. You can see what's going on. There's going to be a complete reversal of everything that's going on unless we can retain those two Senate seats in Georgia. But that being said, here's what you see in every socialist country. You name it. You don't have everybody equal. You have two tiers of society. You have the rich elite oligarchs and politicians, and then you have the lower class unwashed masses. So people have to wake up and look around. It's not only happening in the States, it's happening in the United States. And if you don't see the beginnings of a two-tiered society where you have the rich elite, powerful oligarchs and politicians, and then the lower level, because there is no middle class, there is the lower level of the unwashed masses, the workers, they don't get the benefits at all. It's only the rich elite and the powerful and the political that are able to have a separate society, yet dictate how the lower classes live.
Well, and we have more and more control of us by our social media. They just announced that they figure that the social media between Twitter and Facebook
and Google.
Yeah, that's not so much social media, but that's a search engine.
No, it's not. It's not just a search engine. Don't forget, Google owns YouTube.
Oh,
that is okay. Absolutely social media.
That's true. That they turned 6 million votes towards Biden by restricting what you saw. And, you know, so one of the things that they said was CNN got huge amounts of playtime on the social media where Fox and the other ones did not. So they push people only towards their liberal point of view in social media. And it made a big impact on the election. And speaking of the election, you and I were talking last time we had coffee about Sidney Powell and that kind of we thought that the Trump administration was kind of distancing themselves from her. And that's actually not true. What seems to be true is that Rudy Giuliani is going in one direction with the types of voter fraud, and Sidney Powell is going in another, and her direction is the Dominion voting machines. She believes that that was massive fraud. But, you know, there also every day, more and more comes out about all of the different types of fraud. Right now, they're recounting in Wisconsin. They're finding votes that have never been counted. They're arresting people for, you know,
voter fraud
for voting, for filling out ballots for other people and for dead people. I mean, there are so many types of voter fraud. Just this election was so filled with fraud. And it's frustrating, Ron, to see on the mainstream media that there's nothing to see here, people. There's really nothing to see. This was the most fair election and fraud-free election in history. That is absolutely untrue. And again, the media is feeding people malarkey and people don't know what to believe.
What's happening as well is that the triumvirate, which is the Twitter, which is the Facebook, which is the Google, the three CEOs of those corporations are the ones that are thwarting and obstructing and censoring truth.
Yes.
Okay. And
censoring is the big
thing. It's huge. The censorship is just absolutely huge. And that's why people, and the manipulation. Okay. So the thought manipulation, the algorithms, all of those types of things. And that is a form of oppression. Now here's the deal. These are private companies. You voluntarily join them. You voluntarily join Facebook. You voluntarily join Twitter. You voluntarily use Google and you use like YouTube. Okay. That's voluntary on your part, but that does not give them the right to censor, to manipulate you, because they are using the public airwaves to do it. They're using the internet. The internet is not private. It belongs to everyone in the United States of America. And then the other thing that really bothers me, and it's the reason that I pretty much have significantly reduced my profile on Facebook, which I use all the time, but I'm reducing that, and I've gone to MeWe, and I've gone, which is like the Facebook and free of censorship, and also Parler, which is like Twitter, free of censorship. The reason is now Facebook is using tracking algorithm software to track the user, not only in Facebook, but throughout the internet and all of social media. So you, and it's called, by the way, it's called investigative software. So my question is, what kind of agency are you, Facebook? Are you a law enforcement agency? Why are you using investigative software and gonna track someone like me throughout the internet? Who gives you the right to do that? And who gives you the right to take that information and then give it to a third party?
My guess is that when you sign something that is 100 pages long in tiny print, when you sign up, we probably give them permission. But they, still, I disagree with that whole premise that they are doing that. Here's a perfect example. On Thanksgiving Day, the GOP lawmaker, who is Pennsylvania Senator Doug Mastriano, this guy was a highly decorated colonel in our military. He is extremely well-credentialed and respected. And he was involved in a hearing that they had in Pennsylvania, because what they're seeing is that the fraud in Pennsylvania was absolutely staggering, is the word that they've used. And they convened a Senate Majority Policy Committee with the goal of uncovering exactly what happened in Pennsylvania during the election. So Twitter came in and banned him from Twitter. I mean, that, how do you do that to a legislator, to a colonel, to somebody that's trying to get at the truth? And they don't want him to, so they ban him.
Well, see, that's exactly what I'm talking about. And they ban, you know, he's a governmental, he's a legislator. But look what they've done. Have they not banned President Trump on Twitter now? He doesn't have a Twitter account right now. I don't believe. He has a Twitter account that says POTUS, right? President of the United States. And I believe that Twitter closed that account.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. Well, I don't think I'm speculating. I believe I read that. Maybe it's not true, but I'll have to look it up and talk about it, you know, during a future conversation. But this is what is going on. And these companies, the Twitter, the Facebook, the Google, are moving at lightning speed to censor people in the United States. On the right. Yes. You don't see the same thing happening on the left.
No.
And that's a problem.
My fellow Americans, you've watched for decades as radical Marxists have systematically taken over some of our nation's most cherished institutions. Well, AmericaOutloud.com is fighting back with one of the fastest growing conservative media networks in the world, featuring some of the nation's most influential experts and commentators. Join us. We're in this together, and we consider you part of our family in our crusade to share the news, commentary, and agenda that can lead America back again. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
Well, with all the places in the country that are defunding police, I want to talk about Seattle for a second. Seattle's police union leader, he recently spoke out against the defunding in Seattle, and he's rightfully saying that when you take money away from public safety, it's everybody's public safety that's on the line. It's not just police officers, it's everybody's public safety. The Seattle City Council has said that they would reduce by another 18%. They've already lost 200 officers in Seattle.
Yeah, and I think they lost 34 during the last 2 months. 34 officers in 2 months is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, because it's a big city, but it's not New York. It's not Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So 200 officers leaving there is crazy.
Well, you know, let me just say this for a second. As a guy that supervised a patrol team, an average district, depending on the jurisdiction, but the average district can hold anywhere between, you know, 45 and 85,000 people in it. Like in a big city, like I'm talking big cities. And it's usually a patrol team of about a sergeant and 4 to 5 officers that patrol that district. So, you know, 6 fives are 35, okay, and they lost 34 in 2 months. So you have now lost the equivalent of an entire district and a half, almost two districts patrolled 24/7. Because if you have two districts with three shifts of 5 officers in it, you've lost 24-hour coverage, you know, midnight shift, day shift, swing shift in two districts for 24 hours. And so what has to happen now? Well, okay, so the 34 officers are gone. They have to be replaced.
Sure.
Okay, because you still need to fill the void of those different patrol teams. So they've got to be drawn from somewhere. Do you know where they're going to draw them from? They're going to draw them from detectives. So they're going to non-essential, you know, like PAL, like Police Activities League. They're gonna take crime prevention officers out. They're gonna take officers off the front desk. But detectives are usually the first ones that get called. And so now, yes, you have officers to respond to calls for service, but you don't have anybody to investigate.
That's right. And the Seattle, the mayor's budget would slash the police department spending by $30 million. So this is a tragedy, not just there, but in Portland, in Los Angeles, in New York.
Los Angeles has reduced their budget for policing $150 million.
Yet every one of these places, Ron, where they're defunding police, and Minnesota is another one, the crime is up like crazy. Even though the media doesn't admit it, you have all the stats, you give them often on this show. So that it is a fact. But I want to go over with you, what are the things that we lose when you defund and reduce budgets? What are the things? And you said the first one.
Well, the first thing is the
investigations.
The first thing is actually when you defund, you defund patrol units, because you can't, when you're defunding, Linda, don't forget, people normally leave police departments. You know, there's an attrition rate, right? They leave because they normally retire. They go out on disability retirement. Those ranks have to be filled with new officers, which means academies. So when you defund, you have no academy because you can't afford it. So you have no officers coming in. Then you've got to borrow from investigations.
You have to borrow from investigations.
Right.
And following up on criminal investigations involves investigating. And physical evidence, DNA, things that from crime scenes that have to be collected and preserved takes time.
They really have to
be analyzed. There's legal standards for those things. They have to follow the rules, and there's tedious documentation, which has to be flawless to get this case into court. So if you, Mr. John Q. Public, are the victim, you are going to suffer because they have defunded your police. They have taken those investigators and put them in patrol cars. And now they might arrest somebody for the crime, but to get them prosecuted and get you some justice for the crime that happened against you, you've got to have it investigated and documented.
And, you know, let me go back to patrol and investigations, because in many jurisdictions, patrol officers also investigate preliminarily, and they take fingerprints. You know, they do things like this. When they started defunding quite some time ago, long before this political conversation took place, long before the Black Lives Matter movement took place, agencies were losing money. And so what they were doing is telling officers, okay, we don't need you to do fingerprints anymore. We're going to hire and train CSOs or community service officers, and they're going to come in and do that. Now with defunding, you don't have community service officers doing that. So they're not going to, you know, do fingerprints and things like that. So often, as you're talking about, the forensic evidence is really important. And so when that doesn't take place, all police officers are doing are going out there and taking reports. And that's all they're doing. They're not doing follow-up investigations at the field level, and the detectives don't have time to do it. And now, as we said, when officers are leaving in droves, they're going to take from investigations and put those detectives into field positions, but then you've got nobody to do the follow-up investigations.
And you know, and I know, but I don't think that most people know how much time investigations can take. In a homicide department, you don't just solve it tomorrow.
It's not TV.
Yeah, it's not in your 45 minutes of your TV show. Sometimes it takes weeks, months, years to solve these. And it's legwork, and it's good old fashioned detective work, and it's interviews. And these things take time. If you pull these guys out and you put them in a patrol car, who's going to do that? If it is your family member who was the victim, that couldn't be more important to you.
You know, let me mention something else that people don't understand, regular civilians don't understand. When you take off, when officers are leaving, okay, so normally an officer would stay about 20 years and they're allowed to retire at 20. And you've got an extremely experienced officer. If they haven't been injured and they like their job, they're easily going to stay another five or 10 years.
Yeah.
And the city, everybody benefits from that level of experience. So now what we have is we have a huge brain drain taking place where officers are even leaving before they're 20. If they can find a disability, they're leaving before 20, or they're certainly not staying after 20. And you've lost a person with 20 years or 25 years of experience, and they are going to be replaced by a much less experienced officer.
And especially these guys that did their time in patrol and then went into investigations. I mean, these seasoned investigators are worth their weight in gold to the public. And if they have to be called out of investigations and go back in patrol when they're kind of in their twilight of their police years, they're not going to do it. They're going to retire.
You know, here's a great example, and I'm not deliberately not going to name the agency or the city, but you and I were doing some research last year, and we went to the city in the East Coast in the South, and we met personally with the homicide commander and a detective, cold case homicide. And these are guys with a tremendous amount of experience, and they are so impressive to talk to. And when we were talking to them, of course, all of this political stuff is going on, defunding and everything. And these guys are talking about, you know what, normally I would stay, but I'm going to leave at the end of my 20. Oh my God, to lose that type of quality you know, experience, just intelligence to lose that when you could have kept those people. I'm sorry, that's unforgivable.
Well, and these guys are the best of the best, and they're in a high profile city, and they're in a highly traveled city for tourists. So it's more important than ever. I just don't think that the public, nor do I even think that these absolutely ignorant legislators who are doing this defunding even understand what they are doing to our system. It's not a matter of if you gave it more money a year from now, you can just fix it. No, it takes years and years and years of experience to get to that level. The next thing that when you defund, the next thing that suffers is traffic. So they stop prosecuting things like minor traffic accidents. They don't respond at all to minor traffic accidents.
Hit and runs including.
Now, that might be a minor traffic accident to them. But if you're the person in that traffic accident, you're a woman with, you know, three small kids in the car and you're by yourself, or you're a woman, you know, an older person.
Yeah, I would just say don't even have to be a woman. You can be an older person, a senior citizen.
And that is so scary to some people, and it's very traumatic. Nobody's going to respond. They don't care.
Yeah.
So what happens? It's going to be a he said, she said, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, it becomes an insurance thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so the police are removed. They're not even responding anymore, and it becomes an insurance issue. What is that going to do? It's going to increase your insurance rates, because what the insurance companies are going to do, and I work with them frequently, what they're going to do is just say, hey, look, we can't tell who's telling the truth and who's not telling the truth, so we're just going to take the damage assessment, and divide it up. When you can be the person who was totally victimized, and all of a sudden, you're paying half because the police didn't investigate it.
Exactly.
And now your insurance rate goes up. And so you're the person that's doubly harmed. But, you know, let me go back to something. And that is this vague and ambiguous, you know, fuzzy feeling, sound good, but meaningless rhetoric. Reimagining policing. Kamala Harris was saying that. Many politicians are saying that. And reimagining policing is defunding and disengaging the police from society, from their very communities. And that's their idea of reimagining policing. And the crime rates, as they have been doing it, and who said this? Milwaukee, reimagining policing. Their crime rate is in double digits. It is absolutely through the roof.
Yeah, how'd that work for them? You know, back to traffic, the other people that are going to get away with things are going to be drunk drivers who don't cause a major accident, but cause an accident and shouldn't be driving in the first place. Those people are going to be getting away with it. So I don't know how that works for people, but it doesn't work for me. The other thing that really, really gets hurt, and I know that you have a good example of this in New York, is special crimes teams. And you have, yeah. who are those?
Right.
Things like
special crimes units, anti-crime.
Things like air support, explosive response, computer crime units, canine officers, human trafficking officers, fraud and white collar crime investigations. Those all potentially get cut with defunding. Those, just think about all of those different units, Ron. They all are very, very important to police work, because police work is not one thing. It's not those guys just in the black and whites. It's a big conglomeration of special teams, traffic officers, investigators, people with specialties that help us, the public, to find the person that committed the crime and bring them to justice. And we are losing that ability.
Well, you know, it also brings, you know, you're mentioning traffic. Traffic is a thing that's, as you said, is going to suffer tremendously. And you know, when you're especially in these large municipal urban cities, you have to have order, okay, when you're driving. Here's a great example. New York, and I believe me, as a police officer, I've driven millions of miles, and I'm not too afraid of anything when I'm in the patrol car. And remember when we went to New York, I parked the car. I was so intimidated by all the driving. We stopped at the hotel. The guy said, remember we were at the Marriott at Times Square. The guy said, that's going to be $75 a day to park your car. I said, take it. Just yeah, take it. I don't even want to see the car for 3 days. I'll pay whatever amount.
Yeah. Well, who's going to suffer from defunding is going to be the public, Ron. And they're going to expect that crimes against them are going to be solved. And they're not going to be solved. And they're going to forget that, oh, yeah, they cut the budget. So there's very few experts that think that crime is going to decrease by these methods. And we, the public, are going to suffer.
Yeah,
so I would suggest that in every single community, people absolutely write and call their legislators and tell them to stop it.
And their mayor and city councils. I think you have to go a lot more local on that. And if you don't do that, your crime rates are going to go through the roof. And listen, please don't pay any attention to those people that tell you that crime is down. Crime is absolutely not down. And what is hugely up is crimes that aren't reported, because people are so frustrated with law enforcement and their inability to respond and do anything, they don't even call the police anymore. So just take a look at your violent crime rates, because I trust and tell you as a former law enforcement officer that if your violent crime rate is up, then your lower misdemeanor crime rates are up also.
Yes. Well, I don't have a lot of time left, but I would like to tell people to email us or reach out to us on our new email, Dr. Ron and Linda at talkingwhilemarried.com. DrRonandLinda at talkingwhilemarried.com. We'd love to hear from you and tell us what you think and what you might want to hear from us.
Contrary to the politicians, Dr. Ron and Linda are all about the people, the unwashed masses.
I don't know about you, but I take showers.
We're with you. But listen, help us make our program even better by sending us an email, even to just to say, hi, love the show, or could you guys talk a little bit about this in the future? That's Talking While Married, and we're on Monday through Friday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on America Out Loud.